Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Monday, March 3, 5:09. Don't we move the clocks ahead next week? Is that right?
Yeah, and it's March 2.
Oh, it is?
I think so.
Oh, yeah, you're right, it is. Why does my watch say March 3?
Maybe.
Because the 29th came in there, and it's not used to the 29th, probably, right?
You're right.
Time traveling in the middle of the night, and we're welcoming you back from the future.
It's the leap year problem with
your
my watch.
Watch doesn't observe. You must not have a smartwatch.
I've got a very expensive watch. I'm going to have to write Walt Disney and ask him how to adjust this.
Mickey got a little ahead of himself.
So, hello, welcome to March the 2nd. So next Monday at this time, we're going to be very, very tired, right?
Yes.
Unless you plan for it on Sunday night and go to bed a little earlier, right?
No, it won't make any difference.
And I'll be in Florida, so I won't care.
Oh, really?
Good
timing, Mary. Very good timing. Because...
But my plane leaves Sunday morning early, so I better be up.
Well,
that's when it changes, overnight Saturday.
Right. My dad used to drive everybody crazy. He used to, like on Friday, he'd start moving the clocks. On Friday. And then I drive everybody crazy now in my house because for about a week I say, what's the new time now? What's the old time? And my wife always says, get over it. Get over it. It's Sunday. You adjusted but you can't get over it in one day. So it's going to, like, Monday at this time, those of us who are here, Mary, will feel like it's 4:10 instead of 5:10, right?
Yeah.
And I think that goes on for a while. Now, Andy, you're still on Arizona time.
Yeah, I'm an hour behind you right now. Anyway,
okay, already. What's the date as far as you're concerned today?
Today is May 3rd. May 3rd.
I'm just looking forward to having my mantle clock read the correct time because I have an old-fashioned clock that's really hard to set. And so when the time changes, I just leave it. And then wait 6 or 7 months. And then
it's right twice a year.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Well, good morning, everybody. Nice to have you all here. Let's see. Annett was doing Northwestern basketball. He's probably celebrating,
he
right? Because they won.
They did. Finally, after 12 games in a row, they win. The last win they had, by the way, came against Nebraska in Evanston. Nebraska, under former Bulls coach Fred Hoiberg, has lost 14 in a row now.
Ouch.
Yeah, that hurts.
Hey, how about the Fighting Illini, though?
Yeah. 20th win of the year.
I was biting my nails yesterday.
1 point. They won by 1 point.
Yeah, I would assume it was a big three, about a minute 28 to go, and they held on by one over Indiana and win their 20th game.
Not bad.
No, not at all.
It's going to be fun March Madness around here, huh?
Yeah, it'll be nice because there's a chance that maybe more than one Illinois team will actually get in because it's been barren in the state with teams representing the state of Illinois in the NCAA tournament
for a long time.
Yeah,
well, Illinois's been barren. For a long time.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
You were out at spring training. How are the White Sox looking there, Andy?
You know, I'll tell you, it was an interesting vibe out there. It really was, walking through the clubhouse every morning. And there's a lot of young, experienced players on that team. And there's a lot of young guys that are very talented. This Luis Robert character that you're hearing a lot about, listening to the ball come off his bat, it sounds like a sonic boom.
Yeah, the hype reminds me of the Chris Bryant hype.
Yeah, it's real, too. I mean, this kid can play outfield as well, and he runs like a deer. I mean, it's incredible to watch.
Who was it who said, was it Eloy Jimenez, who said he's going to be the next Mike Trout?
Yeah, and that's not, no pressure, kid. Don't worry about it. Just compare him with the best player in baseball right now.
Well, and from what I hear, he handles it pretty well.
Yeah, he's
but he's never played a game in the majors.
Correct, and he got a big payday, so I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him. And the nice thing for him is he's got a lot of fellow countrymen around him. His locker, not coincidentally, is between Jose Abreu and Yoan Moncada. So there's guys that are kind of keeping an eye on him and, you know, trying to coach him through life, first of all, and then life as a baseball player.
I'm going to have to one day get down to the ballpark and bring Marianne, who's Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done this before with her. First of all, the guys are a little more open and friendly when they see a nice-looking woman around. And second of all, then when she does her fluent Spanish thing on them, then they don't even look at me anymore.
Right. You're not even there.
Right. And we'll try that this year. WGN-TV's Courtney Guzman covering a scary crime in the North Sheffield area this morning. What's the latest on that? Courtney, hi.
Hey, Bob. Good morning. So, yeah, we're following this case of a 28-year-old woman who was, or says she was sexually assaulted while riding in an Uber. This happened last night around 7:40. We know she was picked up in the 3300 block of North Sheffield at a bar there, Redmond's Ale House. And we know that the woman was sexually assaulted en route and then dropped off in the 3300 block of North Karloff. Now, what's unclear at this hour is whether or not that was her intended destination. We're trying to find out, and detectives are still trying to narrow down if and where this sexual assault actually occurred, if the driver pulled over and where this all took place. But we know that there's about a 4-mile distance from where she was picked up and dropped off. We know that the woman is also at the hospital at this hour, at Community First Hospital, where she's being checked out, and detectives are working to talk to her right now.
So she was picked up around 3300 North Sheffield and then dropped off 3300 North Karloff. Is that right?
Yeah. So we're talking from Lakeview to Kilbourne Park. So, yeah, Redmond's Ale House and then over to Kilbourne Park. It's a residential area where she was dropped. So we do know that it was an Uber driver, a male Uber driver, but at this hour, detectives are still working to try to pinpoint and find that Uber driver. And, you know, Uber does have a safety feature on its app. There's a panic button there that you can use. If you get into trouble, you can use it, but it's unclear if that woman actually used it last night in this instance.
Scary stuff. All right, yeah. Keep us posted on that. Thank you, Courtney.
We will. Thank you.
Have a great day. It's 5:20 right now, and let's go to the first caller of the day from a civilian, of course. Velma in Wheaton, you get our prize today. Good morning. How you doing, Velma?
Good morning. I'm doing good for a Monday.
Well, you sound wide awake. Are you getting ready for work?
I'm actually in my lot right now. I work at 7-Eleven.
Oh, so you're on the job.
I'm on the job.
You know what?
But don't tell nobody.
Don't tell anybody that you're calling radio stations, you mean?
Yeah.
Are you in the Wheaton area, or is that where you live, or is that where you work?
I work in Wheaton, but I live in Aurora.
You know, I was at a 7-Eleven, was it yesterday or the day before, and I noticed that the person behind the counter was wearing rubber gloves. Have you gone to that now because of the coronavirus?
No, well, we serve food at our store. Most of the stores do. So, yeah, we do just wear the gloves to make sure protection and safety for the food.
Oh, so I was wondering whether this was because of the coronavirus or just normal. If you handle food, you always have the rubber gloves in, huh?
Yes.
Okay, I got it. Well, let's see. Let's get you a prize, Velma, for being the first call. How about a $50 gift certificate from Builder's Supply Outlet?
That's awesome.
There's so much more than kitchen cabinets. Check out The Edge, their state-of-the-art kitchen and bath showroom in Broadview. We'll get that out to you. And hang on a second here, and we'll get the information and deliver that prize. By the way, how about a health food section in 7-Eleven in the future? Because, you know, I'm hungry, I gas up or something, I go in there, and, you know, all the choices are, well, let's just say they're not really, you know, the best for my body. You know what I mean?
We do have power bar sections. Good, healthy.
According to Mrs. Surratt, those are like candy bars. Sometimes worse.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know. I might as well just get one of my favorite bars instead, Three Musketeers or something. All right, hold on, Velma, and thanks for checking in with us.
Thank you.
It's 5:23 almost right now. And let's see, what else did I want to mention here this morning? Yeah, I was at the 7-Eleven, and I saw that, and I thought, oh, everybody's freaking out now about this. I talked to a friend of mine over the weekend, and he was supposed to go to Germany this summer. And so he canceled his trip now, and he was supposed to he's supposed to fly back to Chicago from his home in Miami in a couple weeks. Now he's driving. He doesn't even want to go on a plane. People are panicked. Andy, you just flew back from Arizona.
Yeah.
So did you notice on the plane anything different?
No, I noticed it more in the airport itself. There were people walking around with masks and stuff. And then, they have the announcements, please wash your hands, warm soap and water. And then just kind of reminding you to do it. And I didn't really see that many people on the plane with them.
Did you, when you used the washroom on the plane to wash your hands, did you turn on the water with your foot?
My elbow. Yeah, it's the old elbow.
You have to be a Cirque du Soleil performer.
Exactly.
Especially in an airplane bathroom.
Yeah.
There's no room to turn around.
Yeah, I had to stand on the toilet and reach over with my elbow. Yeah.
Can't be too careful these
days. No, not at all.
Oh, man. A little later this morning, we'll check in with our expert who we've been talking to from time to time in different time periods on the broadcast. Today, we'll talk to Dr. Eileen Marty, who is an infectious disease expert who actually advises the government and works with World Health Organizations everywhere. We'll get her take on what's happening now with the coronavirus at about 7:48 this morning. And I know Dr. Kevin Most, who we talk to every Monday at about 6:40 or so, will have a few things to say about that, too, as we update you on what's going on with the virus, which, what did I hear? There was a case in Chicago over the weekend, right, Steve?
Yeah, there's a case in suburban Cook County. We don't know any more details about who the person is, the age, or anything like that. But we do know the person is in isolation, and they're waiting for some final tests from the CDC, but they do believe it is coronavirus, yeah.
And let's see, Washington State, California, and wasn't there a case in New York just reported?
Yep. New York reported a case as well. As a matter of fact, I have a friend who lives in New York City and said, went out to the grocery store yesterday and waited in line to get into the grocery store because the one that he went to was the people were, it was sort of not necessarily a run on it, but a lot of people had the same idea as him to go to the grocery store and stock up. So I don't know if you want to call that panic, but certainly concern.
Yeah. Well, I went through one little container of Purell over the weekend. you can go through those pretty fast, those little ones that you keep in your pocket. But I my wife keeps saying, don't do that right after you shake hands with somebody. It's rude, you know. So I try to sort of hide that, you know. So so I don't offend anybody, but everybody's using that stuff now, right?
Yeah, you find people won't shake hands now. It's the old.
Well,
fist
you're not
bump,
supposed
you know?
To. You're supposed
you can't
to.
Do it in church. Yeah. That's for sure.
Oh, that's right, Mary. The traditional passing of the germs. They don't do that.
Yeah,
now?
We're not even having wine in the Eucharist. Not doing that anymore. Can't shake hands. Can't hold hands during the Our Father. Oh yeah.
And when you wash your hands, you're supposed to wash for 20 seconds.
Happy birthday.
Be sure. Pardon me?
You're supposed to sing happy birthday when you wash your hands.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it gives you the idea how
so
much
you
time.
Wash it wash your hands long enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's anecdotal on my part, but also at my Whole Foods, they took away the free samples of fruit in the fruit aisle, so there's no free grapes anymore.
Not that you were eating those.
Not that I was eating them, but they're gone.
That stinks.
And when you wash your hands, make sure you get your fingertips, right? And I remember Dr. Marty was telling us about this, too. Get your fingertips, get between the fingers, right? When you press buttons, like elevator buttons, use your knuckles.
Yep.
I just keep my gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even use my hands.
you know, wear a complete hazmat suit like I am this morning. Agribusiness Brief Time with Orion.
Good morning. In case you missed it, over the weekend, the state of Illinois has a new director of agriculture. Governor Pritzker named Jerry Costello as the new director on Friday. And according to Rich Giebert, president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, it shows the governor's commitment to the largest industry in the state. And we look forward to working with Director Costello in his new role of Director of Agriculture for the state of Illinois. We hope we have a better start to the week than we did to the end of the week and the month last Friday. My market sheets were red with one exception. That exception was March corn futures. March corn futures gained 2 cents a bushel on Friday, but the other numbers were red. March wheat down half a cent. March soybeans down a penny and three quarters a bushel. Livestock futures, the June lean hog contract down $1.27 a hundredweight. The April live cattle contract down the $3 daily limit. And the April feeder cattle contract down $2.02. A couple of rather unusual animal stories over the weekend. In Owensboro, Kentucky, Chuck and Ann Hagen never imagined they would be caring for quintuplets. But in a cozy room of their home, the Hagens have been giving round-the-clock attention to 5 lambs, 3 males and 2 females, with the names Bertha, Banjo, Red, Marky Mark, and Peanut. They were born on February 12th. That's about a 1 in a million shot to have lambs producing quintuplets. And then at the San Antonio Livestock Show last week, they discovered a steer with rabies. So they're keeping an eye on that situation. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
How about that? Animal stories from Orion. It's 5:40. Showbiz news. I'm very excited about this. Have you heard about Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, what he's been doing out in Los Angeles? I think he started this. I don't know if he's done this anywhere else yet, but he did the L.A. show recently. He does these little question and answer get-togethers and talks about his programs, and he's bringing this show to Chicago on March 19th at the Chicago Theater. Pee-wee's Big Adventure 35th Anniversary Tour with Paul Rubens. Did you guys ever watch the... I know you probably saw the movie or the movies, but did you ever watch the CBS show?
Pee-wee's Playhouse?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I loved it.
It was must watch.
I had to watch it.
It was
hilarious.
So far ahead of its time.
Yeah. I loved him.
And I don't know if little kids liked it too, but it was a whole other level for us watching, wasn't it?
There was a lot of adult humor.
I remember back in, I guess it was the mid-80s maybe, at the height of his popularity, he did a show at the Park West here. I was working for Channel 2, so I went out to interview Paul Rubens, and it was very interesting because we sat down before the show to tape our interview, and he's smoking a cigarette. And he says to me, now listen, you can ask me anything, I'll talk about anything, but I'm not going to go out of character. And then he flicks the cigarette and, you know, we crank up the camera and he's Pee Wee Herman. Of course, that was before the bit of trouble he got in. So,
yeah.
So he's back and he's touring around the country and coming to Chicago with that show on March 19th. Let me see. Is he doing? He's doing two shows here, March 19 and March 20. I'm sure that will be a sellout, don't you think? I would think so.
Well, now that he knows you, maybe you can get him in here.
I don't think he remembers. Pee Wee's Big Adventure 35th Anniversary Tour with Paul Rubens, March 19 and 20 at the Chicago Theater. I'll have to talk to Dean Richards about that when we do our little entertainment conversation after 8 o'clock here. It's 5:43 right now. Did you get outside yesterday? I mean, there was a lot of pressure to do something outside, but you know, it wasn't exactly warm enough to do a lot of things, but you had to be out. I was running errands, and I would stop every once in a while, just get out of the car, lean up against the car, and stick my face in the sun. I mean, it's kind of sick.
Good?
It's kind of sick around here, right? The temperature, you know, gets to 50-something, and we go nuts out here.
I love the people who put on shorts and just think, oh, hey, I can go running in shorts now. I'm like, it's not that warm.
You know, it's funny, too, because when I was in Arizona, you know, the mornings are kind of cool out there. It gets to, you know, 55 or whatever.
Yeah, it's the desert.
Yeah, so I walk out and try to go to the White Sox camp, and I've got a short sleeve shirt on, and you know, and I'm wearing my jeans, and that's it. And the lady that was guarding the parking lot was dressed up with a hat, gloves, and like what looked like a winter coat.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
She looked at me, and she's like, aren't you cold? I'm like, this is balmy for me. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, sure, because 50 out there, people are freezing.
Exactly.
Well, it finally happened last night. I was picking up dinner to go at a restaurant, so I walk over to the carryout area and give the young guy behind the counter my name, and he gets very excited, and he says, wow, Surratt, are you Judd? He was very disappointed when I told him no.
Oh.
And he said he used to listen to Judd all the time on Cubs and Hawks games. Judd's in Boston now. He's the voice of the Bruins, my little nephew. And I am Judd Surratt's uncle. That's how I'm known right now. Speaking of hockey, Andy, what is the deal now on the Hawks? How many points out are they as far as playoffs?
Yeah, so as action starts today, the Hawks are off until tomorrow, but they're 6 points out of that final wild card spot.
So they picked
right
up
now.
Two somewhere over the weekend, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, actually, they got some help yesterday because I believe Minnesota and Vancouver both lost yesterday. Those are teams that are ahead of them. And you know, it's time to get healthy here because the Hawks have 5 of their next 6 at home. They have 11 of the 15 games in this month are at home because they were home for 3 games in the entire month of February. So it evened out in the wash, so to speak, here in March.
I had given up on them last week, but I guess I shouldn't. There's still a hope.
Yeah, there's a glimmer. You know, Corey Crawford's been playing really, really well since he's been able to kind of reestablish himself as the number one goaltender with Robin Leonard off in Vegas now. And if you've watched or listened, Jonathan Toews is a man on a mission right now. And he wants to get this team into the playoffs. If he has to do it himself, it seems like he wants to do it.
Hey, and how about the kid? What's his name? Kubalik?
Yeah, Dominik Kubalik with nearing 30 goals. He's got 29 on the year. It looked like he had his 30th the other day, but Drake Caggiula got a stick on it and deflected it in right past Kubalik. So.
Is he going to be Rookie of the Year?
He should be. He leads all rookies in goals by a long shot, and it would be really, really kind of cool to see that happen.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. White Sox open at home March 26th,
March
right?
26th against the Kansas City Royals.
And what did I hear? The Houston Astros will be here in August, and the Sox will be in Houston.
Yeah.
That should be interesting. I'm waiting for the first fan with a garbage can lid banging away.
They're all out in spring training. I'm telling you, the Astros are really wearing it. And, hey, if you did the crime, you're going to get obviously going to get some grief about it. And fans are very inventive. And I know at the ballpark of the West Palm Beaches, where they share a training complex with the Nationals, when the two teams played each other, Nationals fans were bringing in signs. But it was a home game for the Astros. So security was taking the signs away from these fans as they were going into the ballpark.
This is going to be going on all season.
Yeah, and they had to kind of keep an eye on all the garbage receptacles around the ballpark because people were kicking them and banging them.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I knew and they're going to get by happen. Pitches, too.
Yeah,
early on. So that's.
But the commissioner warned on that.
Yeah, and the commissioner also called the trophy a piece of metal. No, so I think they have a lot of respect at this point. You know?
Oh, man. Hey, what's going on with the whole investigation into the Boston Red Sox?
Yeah, we haven't heard much about that. I mean, because Alex Cora was the manager. He got fired this year. He was one of the bench coaches for the Astros during the whole scandal. Carlos Beltran also got penalized for it. He was with the Mets and then got fired as he was going to do his first managerial job. We really haven't heard a whole lot about that. I think that baseball may be kind of looking at how it investigated the Astros and rethinking things. I don't know if it was as serious of a situation as it was with the Astros. Again, I don't know this from inside knowledge or anything, but the lack of any kind of communication or any kind of leakage about that is kind of tells you, I think, that they're still looking into it.
And I was listening to Mark Carman here on GN Sunday, I think mm-hmm. it was, and I'm trying to remember now if he said it or he reported on this. Have you heard anything about this, that this year Major League Baseball is there's a new rule now that players cannot go into the video room yeah. during a game?
Players are not allowed in there during the game.
Well, how are they going to police that?
They are going to have to. I really don't know. I mean, if they have to station security, outside the video room, because obviously the video room has become a very important thing now with replay, because the replay room will call the dugout and say, "Oh, you better look at that one."
So or players will go in there.
Yeah, they want to look at what their swing was. They want to look and see what mm-hmm. the pitch was, if it was a strike, if it was a ball that they mm-hmm. swung at.
Yeah, and just look at their form.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's a tool of learning within the game. So I think, but part of it, you have to start again. You got kind of have to start over again with what the Astros did, using cameras to kind of relay all those signals to their players, that players of today are going to get penalized a little bit because of that, because they want to try to keep it above board and keep it fair. Again, I think that that's a little overreactive, because you have to understand now that what happened is the commissioner didn't punish any of the players. Mm-hmm. So the players are not going to be like, well, if I go in there, what are they going to do? They didn't do anything to the Astros. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that that's still going to happen.
So do you think in terms of what's going to happen with the Red Sox, that Major League Baseball is thinking, whatever they find out, if it warrants it, that they've got to hand out more severe punishment?
They're going to try, but see, they had to deal with the Players Association, and the union's pretty strong. And I think what happened there was Tony Clark, who's the head of the union, said that, yeah, we'll have our players cooperate, but they need immunity. And I mm-hmm. think that's the only way that these players were able to kind of reveal what the details of the plan were. So I think that they did it because they were not going to get punished. And it's kind of hard to think that that's going to be reversed now with a new investigation, when it might not be as serious as the original allegations. So it's a mess, because, Rob Manfred really did not handle this whole thing very well.
He didn't.
And I understand that he's in a bad situation, because he works for the owners.
Right.
Basically, the commissioner of baseball works for the owners, and the owner of the Astros didn't get much. I mean, they find the team, but this is a billionaire that owns the ball club. It's like finding you and me $100. You know, I mean, you'll take it out of your pocket and go, here you go, take it.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. So it's a mess, and it really needs to clean itself up, because baseball does not need this right now.
No.
I mean, the game was going really well. You get past the steroid era. You got a live ball last year. I don't know what the ball is going to be like this year, obviously, but it's not something that the sport needs, especially before the season starts, because, hopes are so high for all these clubs in spring training, and now you have this big, black cloud hanging over.
Like you say, it's a mess.
It is a mess.
And the thing about the fines, it reminds me of a news story I heard over the weekend about fines that big companies get, and you hear about this all the time, AT&T being fined $50 million or whatever. And I think it was some market analyst who was talking about these fines with some of these big companies. He said, you got to remember that, he was talking about the government issuing these fines, that basically it means nothing to these companies. It's 3 days of profits yeah. for a big company, these multi-million-dollar fines. And the government's in the position where they have to do something, and it sounds pretty good, but if you dig a little deeper, you realize it's meaningless to these big corporations.
Yeah.
It's just like what you're saying about the fines
yeah.
to the owners of these ball clubs.
Yeah. I mean, they're making so much money hand over fist with ticket prices and concessions and things like that. And, the NFL, too, when guys get fined for a late hit or something like that, it's something like $5,000, or I think the biggest one I've heard was like in the $70,000 range. But, again, these are players that are making millions of dollars.
You and I get fined here for talking too much, $50. It hurts.
It hurts big time.
Yeah.
That's one less coffee I can buy this week.
Let's get into the newsroom. Talking about money, Steve's got the market outlook. First it looked good, then it looked bad. How does it look now?
Well, it's going down. The markets were initially up overnight in the futures market, but the market's not holding on to those gains at all. As a matter of fact, the implied opening now, which takes into account a number of different things for the Dow, is down 221 points. So it looks like we'll see some red there. There are a couple of things that could move the markets further today on the Associated Bank Market Desk calendar for this Monday, March the 2nd. U.S. and China manufacturing data among them. The market PMI is out at about 8:45 Chicago time. We'll get the ISM manufacturing index. Construction spending data is also coming today. And some earnings from JD.com and Tilray. Just a few things that could move the markets on Monday, March the 2nd.
Greetings at 6:09. Trying for a good hair day? This may help. The Cleveland Clinic, thanks to their dermatologists, came out with a report on the best vitamins, supplements, and products for healthier hair. Let's see here what they're telling us about bad hair, first of all. Reasons your hair could be damaged. Coloring, blow drying, and overwashing can all harm your hair, but there are also some other landmines to watch out for, such as inadequate nutrition, health problems, certain medical conditions, such as thyroid and anemia, can negatively affect hair health and growth. Genetics, of course. Between 60 and 70% of the population carries the gene for male and female pattern hair loss. Age. One doctor here quoted as saying, at any given time, we have hairs growing, resting, and shedding. But as we enter our 30s, the percentage of hairs actively growing goes down. Wow, it starts early, doesn't it? And major life events. They say all hair, healthy or not, has a relatively short life cycle. It's normal to shed anywhere between 100 and 200 strands a day, but some life events cause periods of increased shedding, including major surgery and having a baby. In fact, up to half of your hair can shift from a growing to a shedding phase postpartum. And then they list here some supplements and vitamins that can improve hair growth and health. They say a well-balanced diet is the first key to top-notch hair, but you may still need extra help to kickstart your hair restoration. Here's the list here. Multivitamins can help bridge your nutrition gap, they say. Iron, important for hair growth and health. Omega-3 fatty acids, it's what you get in certain fish and supplements. I never heard of this one. Biotin, B-I-O-T-I-N. Taking that for hair growth may be just what the stylist ordered, says the Cleveland Clinic. And since it's a water-soluble B vitamin, any excess will leave your body through urine. Doctors recommend taking 3 to 5 milligrams a day. Biotin. Check that out. See, Grzanich is checking now to see if it's in Big Macs.
Seeing if it is available at Amazon.
Yeah. I want to know why more women aren't balding if postpartum you're supposed to lose more hair.
Well, because you have a lot of hair, you lose some, we don't notice. Maybe that's it.
I guess, but you know, my mom had 7 kids and she had a great head of hair.
Genetics.
I guess so.
And then zinc is on the list. It's the active ingredient in some over-the-counter anti-dandruff shampoos. And in this report from the Cleveland Clinic, it says here, these shampoos have a hidden perk. They've been shown to grow hair. This is because we all have some yeast that lives on the scalp. If that yeast grows too much, microscopic inflammation causes our hair to shed. You can use hair growth shampoos to improve scalp and hair health, even if you don't have dandruff or flaking. It's zinc pyrithione, P-Y-R-I-T-H-I-O-N-E. So there you go. Good luck on that good hair day today. Doctors at the Cleveland Clinic say success depends more on the duration of hair loss than anything else. People who have been losing hair for only 2 or 3 years are more likely to see noticeable results than those losing it for 10 to 20 years. You may be able to restore your hair to what it was like 5 years ago, but not much beyond that, says this one dermatologist. Those are the hair follicles that can be woken up with nutritional supplementation and medical treatments. Hair that has become too thin and fine can no longer penetrate and exit the surface of the scalp. You have to be reasonable with your expectations. And as always, talk to your doctor if you start shedding more hair than is normal for you. It's 6:14. Good morning. I'm Cy Sperling. I'm not only a... I'm not only the owner, I'm, what did he say, I'm a,
no, the
I'm
president, a customer, member.
I'm the president of the member. He just passed away like a couple weeks ago, didn't he? Who will ever forget those commercials?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Here we go at 6:18. Here's the latest on the coronavirus. The second death has heightened concern. Congressional negotiators in the White House are reportedly close to agreeing on a multi-billion dollar spending package to deal with the outbreak. More than 88,000 people worldwide have been infected now. The virus has been detected in at least 60 countries. We'll check in with Dr. Kevin Most, the chief medical officer for Northwestern Medicine, in about 20 minutes here. And between 7:30 and 8, Dr. Eileen Marty, who actually advises the government and the World Health Organization and the White House and the National Security Administration on infectious diseases, will join us to talk more about this.
Now, page 2.
Pete Buttigieg dropped out of the Democratic presidential race last night. His decision came shortly before Super Tuesday, the biggest primary day of the year coming up. Mayor Pete struggled to win support from black voters, a key pillar of the Democratic coalition, and a vulnerability that was emphasized Saturday in South Carolina, where he finished fourth. Buttigieg made history by becoming the first openly gay candidate to earn delegates for the presidential nomination in a major political party. And he also broke barriers by making his marriage to his husband a major part of his campaign. Here's a little bit of what he said last night in South Bend.
And so we must recognize that at this point in the race, the best way to keep faith with those goals and ideals is to step aside and help bring our party and our country together. So tonight, I am making the difficult decision to suspend my campaign for the presidency. I will no longer seek to be the 2020 Democratic nominee for president, but I will do everything in my power to ensure that we have a new Democratic president come January.
Why is it that it's always the best moment for a politician when they give their concession speech? You ever notice that? I mean, if people want to get elected, they should start giving their concession speech early on along the campaign trail.
Page 3.
Let's see here. The popular founder of Trader Joe's has passed away. How does he say his name? Was it Colomb? Joe Colomb? C-O-U-L-O-M-B-E. Colomb? Colombi? He started Trader Joe's, the chain that brought affordable wine and unusual food to millions of Americans. He was 89. Trader Joe's helped change the way Americans shop for groceries, introducing markets stocked with staples and novel food items from private labels, with most packages carrying the Trader Joe's moniker. Some items became so popular, they earned their own nickname, like Two Buck Chuck, the Charles Shaw brand of wine that sells for less than $3. The first Trader Joe's opened in Pasadena, California in 1967. I like Trader Joe's. You know what? When I get that catalog, it's very amusing reading. And the only problem is that I want to buy everything in the catalog. But it's a good place to go, especially when you're hungry. Stop in. They're always cooking up a little sample of something back there next to the coffee. Joe Colombi passes away at the age of 89. Column, we think? Okay.
Column?
Well, Joe knows who he was, believe me.
Page 4.
Magazine has named Chicago's metro area the nationwide leader in economic investment as more companies moved into the region and expanded their current operations last year. This marks the seventh straight year the Chicago metro area earned the honor from Site Selection, a business publication that tracks real estate and corporate development. The magazine tracked 416 business expansions and relocations in 2019. That accounted for more than $5 billion in investment in the Chicago area. That includes Uber Freight's move into the old main post office, which brought more than 2,000 jobs.
To whom it may concern.
AT&T, the second largest pay TV provider behind Comcast, is launching a nationwide live TV streaming service today that offers a cable-like experience from a set-top box and on-screen program guide to a remote control with actual numbers delivered entirely over the Internet. The service, called AT&T TV, could be the all-in-one platform that entices reluctant cord cutters to take the plunge into live TV streaming, uncluttering a jumbled world of media devices, smart TVs, and program services. Can't keep up with all this stuff. And, you know, I have the Comcast Infinity where it has the voice command. Mm-hmm. The only problem with that now is I don't know any channel numbers anymore. I felt more comfortable. We used to have DirecTV, and I knew all the numbers, and I didn't think their system was as user-friendly or as easy as the Comcast Infinity system. But, you know, it's like now with phone numbers. Nobody knows any phone number anymore because it's all stored in your phone. So I want to know the channel numbers. I feel like I've lost control. And there's too much to watch, and there's too many streaming services, and I still can't figure out how to get Apple Plus. So I don't know that I need all these new services anyway, because all I'm watching, I'm just watching like Johnny Carson and the Munsters and Dragnet, Honeymooners. I mean, you know, I'm not. My television viewing is like something's happened to me lately. I don't know. I've dropped out of the 21st century.
You're resisting, right?
Although I am watching that McMillion series. Have you seen that?
I have not, but I've heard about that. Is that
really
the Monopoly thing with McDonald's?
Yeah. Okay. It's fantastic. And the FBI guy who's featured, he's fantastic. He's nuts, but he's fantastic. So I am watching that. And, oh, you know what? My wife and I watched the Gwyneth Paltrow Goop Lab. Have you heard about this? Mm-hmm. I think there's only 6 episodes of the Goop Lab. And it's Gwyneth Paltrow and her team exploring all sorts of new age healing.
Oh, I heard about this.
Things like
sounds
that.
Sounds really bizarre.
I think we saw the other day, if you get to episode 3, you will be shocked.
I don't think I'll get through episode 1.
Get to episode 3, you'll be shocked.
Uh-oh.
Hey, you know, a little later this morning, we got a guy coming in here, a hypnotist coming in here, a little after 7. We felt on Monday we might be able to help people even stuck in traffic. You know, we don't want to get you in a trance.
Well,
you're not paying attention.
Good idea.
No, but just to make you feel better, he's got some good tricks. I mean, besides the usual, like helping you stop smoking and all of that, he's got some good meditation tricks to make you feel better on a Monday. That's coming up later.
Can we make him make Mary bark like a chicken?
Why me?
You like that?
I don't know. Just pick somebody. That's what they do, right?
We're not doing like a carnival show here, Steve. we're trying to help people and inform people here, okay?
Stand by for news.
Here's item 6 in the top 6 this morning. Now, you know what? I don't even want to read this story. I don't need to hear this. You see this? Older people who nap during the day are more likely to be diagnosed with heart disease or cancer.
Throw it away.
A study by Stanford University said almost 11,000 people. Oh, they studied 11,000. Okay, they found those who were sleepy during the day were 2.5 times more at risk of developing heart illnesses. Studies have also shown that people who sleep less than 7 hours a day tend to gain more weight and have a higher risk of becoming obese than those who get 7 hours. It's believed to be because sleep-deprived people have reduced levels of leptin, the chemical that makes you feel full, and increased levels of, I've never heard of this, GHRELIN, ghrelin, the hunger-stimulating hormone. You know what? And then I just looked this up. This is what drives you crazy about these health studies, and this is why occasionally we check in with people like Dr. Kevin Most, who will be with us here after the 6:30 news, because these studies, they conflict one another. Because I just Googled naps healthy, and this came up. Doctors say naps are good for most people. Research shows a nap defined as daytime sleeping that lasts between 15 and 90 minutes can improve brain functions ranging from memory to focus and creativity. For some people, naps are as restorative as a whole night of sleep. If you can't get your 8 hours, naps will take care of you. So what am I supposed to believe now? What do I do? I've kind of got my schedule down to where I get about, if I'm lucky, 7 hours at night. Most of the time it's less than that. But I sleep for at least an hour, maybe a little more in the daytime. So even though these sleep experts we've been talking to here in the last month or so have said you can't add it up. It's not like if you nap for 2 hours and sleep at night for six, that's your 8 hours. They say, no, you can't count it that way. Well, guess what? I'm counting it that way. Because mind over matter. And you know what? I know Sean Mozell, the hypnotist, who's coming in here this morning after 7, and he will, I'm sure, back me up on this, that it's mind over matter. If you think that you're getting healthy sleep, if you, before you go to bed, you say, I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning, I'm going to feel good, I'm going to be happy, there's a better chance you will be. Try it. And as you know, I'm Mr. Happy here every morning, so if it works for me, it'll work for you.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Good day. Time for our regular weekly Monday morning house call from Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Hey, Doc, happy Monday morning to you. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great.
Let's talk about Steve Grzanich just reported the third case of coronavirus in the Chicago area. Are we prepared here in the city for all this?
I'll say yes and no. We're getting prepared, I can tell you that. Probably the biggest concern now is how many cases are actually out there, and what are we going to do with the individuals who do test positive? I think what you're going to start to see is you're going to see the number of cases in the United States probably, I don't want to say skyrocket, but they're going to go up substantially as we start to test more. So now it's a matter of, we really don't have room in hospitals to put these patients like we did for the first two patients, put them in isolation. We don't have room for hundreds of people to put in the hospital in isolation when they're healthy. So it's going to be more of a matter of public health saying, all right, you're positive, we want you to quarantine yourself in your own home versus us holding on to them in the hospital.
I've heard conflicting reports about whether the warmer weather is going to help or not. What do you think?
I'm certainly hoping. You know, we have flu season here, and then we have, you know, the summer. And during the summer, do we see some influenza? We do. We still see cases, but it's a little bit more rare. So we're really hoping that this kind of does like what SARS did, you know, 17 years ago. We kind of, you know, flames out. True influenza, the virus itself, is more hardy in the winter, and that's why it does so well. Coronavirus is not true influenza, but we're still hoping that the typical flu season that's kind of hopefully coming to an end here over the next month or two is exactly what will happen to this, and we'll start to see this fade.
Mr. Grzanich has a question for you, Doc.
Dr. Most, yep. Good morning. I wanted to follow up on the hospital part of that. I saw a report, another concerning report, that, you know, part of the hospital process with some of these patients is they go on a ventilator. Will there be enough ventilators for people, and what would happen if that shortage impacts who can be cared for?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. We usually have excess ventilators, obviously, because we have to be prepared for an onslaught, but it's a matter of how many. So if we still see this 80% are healthy, 20% are, you know, more severely ill and needing ventilators, then there's a good possibility that we may have, I don't want to say run short on them, but we may have to then look at other tests that, or other conditions that we're treating and put those off. In other words, some surgeries, we know an individual is going to need to be on a ventilator. If it's an elective surgery, we may need to hold off on those. I don't think we'll get to a point where we totally run out of ventilators. I think, Steve, probably the biggest concern we have in the healthcare field is when an individual comes in, doesn't have a lot of symptoms, but then tests positive. Now what are we going to do with all the healthcare workers that were exposed to that individual? Are we going to then have to quarantine them for 2 weeks? And you're going to see the staffing at hospitals being stressed dramatically.
You look at the numbers on flu And I guess that makes you feel better, and you put that in perspective. How do you look at it, Doc?
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, it's if you look at our flu numbers this year, we're having a fairly good flu season. I mean, 29 million cases of influenza, and we're talking about 90 cases of coronavirus. You know, 280,000 people have been hospitalized because of the influenza illness. We're not seeing anywhere near those numbers. 16,000 deaths, and I'll tell you, we've had over 100 pediatric deaths this year. And this is a virus that we can vaccinate ourselves for, and yet we still only see a vaccination rate of 40 to 45%. I think people need a reality check to say, hey, wait, shouldn't we make sure we're being treated and cared for with the one that's the most common instead of getting all the hysteria? Now, that being said, we are going to see big numbers. We're going to see an increase in the numbers of coronavirus. It's just a matter of how many.
Yeah, you recommend the flu shot? Not too late for that if you haven't gotten one?
No, it's not too late. Matter of fact, if you haven't gotten one, please get one. They're still available out there. The vaccine, we always look at how well it matches up. You know, this year early on, we had the influenza B strain. The vaccine didn't match up really well to that, and that's why we saw those very high numbers in late November and December. Now we see this spike of the influenza A, which is actually a good match. So it's definitely worth getting the vaccine now because it matches up very well with the virus that's circulating currently.
Continuing with Dr. Kevin Most. And, Doc, let's talk a little bit about these numbers coming out of China that show a decrease in the number of new coronavirus cases. Do we believe this report?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Bob. When you can when you can make up the definition, you can make up the numbers. So what I say by that is, you know, initially when the Chinese government started counting them, it were individuals who actually tested positive. Then they found that there was a run on the test. They couldn't get the test done quickly enough, so they went to doing CAT scans on these individuals because it would show the pneumonia portion of it. And that's what they used next. And that's the day you saw that really big spike, because we can get results of a CAT scan in just minutes. The government then said, wait a second, now is there too much hysteria here? And they cut back again. So we really don't know the true numbers. Now, I hate to say good thing about spread as it is right now is we're going to start to really get the true picture of the virulence of this. As we start to get more data, we're going to be able to see, really, is the mortality rate 3% or is it closer to influenza and under 1%? So without good data, we had a lot of hysteria, and we're hoping that with good data we can show that this is not as bad as it's projected to be.
How close are we to a vaccine?
Yeah, that's interesting, too. You know, they're a rush on to make a vaccine. National Institute of Health is definitely working on a vaccine. If you look at most vaccines, it's going to be 12 to 18 months. I think that you'll see this one come out quicker just because of the concern, but I think it'll be restricted as well. I think you're going to see that they're going to be able to make vaccine, but it's going to be held for those over the age of 75 or those with chronic lung problems. The concern the rest of us have in the medical field is, if we make a lot of vaccine for coronavirus, what are those plants supposed to be making but influenza vaccine for next year? So, again, go back to those influenza numbers. It's not like we can put up a factory in 10 minutes and say we're going to start making, you know, this vaccine. Something is going to have to come off the production line in order to allow the coronavirus vaccine to be made. So that's one of the concerns that we have, is will there be a shortage of regular influenza vaccine next year if we rush to do this one?
I know one aspect of all this that you feel is not getting attention is the looming physician shortage. How serious is that?
Yeah, it is. It's very serious, Bob. When we look at the number of physicians that we're going to need, there's estimates, you know, by, you know, the 2030 that we're going to be down 55,000, you know, doctors here. We have to look at the number of doctors actually retiring here over the next few years. Remember, the baby boomers, not only did they impact all of society, but they impacted the number of doctors as well. So we had this big surplus of baby boomer doctors who are now getting to their retirement age, and we really haven't backfilled as well. I think we're going to start to see more concern about primary care. because it's not the most glamorous thing. And you're going to see a lot more of what we call APPs, Advanced Practice Providers, which are nurses who essentially have a master's or doctorate level training, as well as a physician's assistants who are going to be able to aid in the primary care setting. But we do have a big concern here.
I don't want a doctor of mine or a dentist to retire. I'd include barbers in that field, too. When I'm president, Dr. Most, I'm going to make it mandatory that those people work till they're at least 90, because it's very traumatic when you lose those people. We also have something coming up here that a lot of people don't know about, but I know it's big. And tell us about this. What is it called? Match Day? Is that what
Match
it is?
Day. Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting when you look at medical school and how we train our physicians. And I'll just give you the quick primer on it. Joe, you go to undergrad, and hopefully you do very well, because in order to get into medical school, you have to have very good grades. You then go to medical school for 4 years. So right now, you're finishing, if you're a fourth-year student, you're finishing medical school, and you're deciding now what specialty you're going to go into. So you've done all your basic medical training, and now you're saying, okay, am I going to be a surgeon? Am I going to be an OB-GYN? Am I going to be a family doctor? And what happens here in a couple weeks is something called Match Day. And what Match Day is the fourth-year medical students say, I want to go into this specialty, and this is where I want to go. So the doctor will make a list of the top 10 places he wants to go. And then the hospitals who have interviewed you or you've done rotations there make their list. It goes into a computer, and then it's matched up. So for myself personally, I ranked Lutheran General in Park Ridge as my number one. I was fortunate that they ranked me high enough as well. So I got my number one choice and went to Lutheran General for my residency. So this is a very exciting day. You'll see it on the news, because it's the day that everyone opens their envelopes and sees where they're going to be going for their next 3 to 10 years and what specialty they're going to end up in.
Do we have enough people who want to go into family medicine? Because we need more Dr. Marcus Welbys out there.
We do, Bob. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because we have a very unique thing that's going on here in Chicago. And I'd love for people to at least consider this, to send an email to their congressman. In Humboldt Park, we have something called a teaching health center. So, like I said, I went and did my residency at Lutheran General. I picked a very large hospital, and I really wanted that great hospital experience. Family medicine, what we really need to understand going forward is it needs to be in the community. So it's not very difficult to find a doctor in Lincoln Park, because that's a nice neighborhood. You know, people want to practice there and live there. But what we have in Humboldt Park is one of 57 teaching health centers. What that means is that we have family medicine doctors that are embedded in that community, and they're practicing ambulatory care. So you take a group of doctors, you put them in a very difficult community, which is social determinants of health are very bad there, whether it's fresh fruit, whether it's traffic, whether it's public transportation, whether it's the ability to be safe on the streets. And we're putting these doctors in there to care for these individuals, many who have diabetes and heart disease. So it's this great doctor who has this mission of treating the underserved. And Congress, unfortunately, may be getting rid of this, which would be devastating to this country.
Yeah, well, really, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we need all those folks, and we especially need them right now, but even when we don't have a coronavirus outbreak. So.
Yeah, Bob, I'll just give you a simple example. You know, the Congress is saying they're going to consider doing this to save money, and it really doesn't save money. As a matter of fact, it costs us a lot more money. We can treat high blood pressure with medications that cost pennies a day. But if there's no one there to write that prescription for that individual for that high blood pressure, the next thing you know, they've ruined their kidneys. They're on dialysis now, which is a huge cost to society. They have a heart attack or a stroke, which, again, is devastating to themselves from a personal point of view, as well as a cost point of view across the country. So when you look at the funding for this, and you've taken these individuals that say, I want to help this portion of the population, if you yank that away, you're going to end up with no one that's going to go into these communities and practice, and you're going to end up with some devastating outcomes. So I'm really serious. You know, you send an email to your congressman saying, hey, we need to continue the teaching health centers because it's going to make an impact not only on the health of those in that community, which is a community that's often overlooked, but it's also going to have a huge financial impact as well.
Good idea. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer for Northwestern Medicine. We'll talk to you again next Monday morning. And, Doc, I hope you don't mind. I sprayed the phone with Lysol before our chat today. Can't be too careful right now.
You can't. Wash your hands often. Get your flu shot.
Got it. Have a good day.
Take care.
It's coming up on 6:56 right now. And, and we'll talk to the infectious disease expert who actually advises the government, Dr. Eileen Marty. That'll be coming up at 7:48 this morning. Coming up on 10 after 7, Sean Mozell is a consulting hypnotist. He's at the Stop Smoking Center in Wilmette, and he joins us this morning to help us with, among other things, getting better sleep, improving our memory, reducing stress, and of course, if you're still smoking, you need to stop. Sean, good morning. Do you have a message for people who are uptight in their car right now because traffic's not moving?
Well, good morning, Bob. Well, that's an easy one. Just breathe from your belly. Push that lower belly out, and you can feel the seatbelt against your lower belly. Hold it for a few seconds and exhale.
There you go.
Breathe, that lower abdomen breathing.
Lower abdomen, deep breathing, right?
Well, this is even a little bit better for people in the car. Just the lower abdomen breathing will rewire that brain and produce chemicals that will calm them down, mood elevating.
How long have you been doing this? And by the way, where's your stopwatch? We expect you to come in here and wave the stopwatch in front of us and put us in a trance.
Well, that's easy enough, too, but we don't really do it that way anymore.
You've been doing it for a long time,
well,
haven't you?
Well, about 45 years I studied this subject, mind, brain, subconscious, how to reprogram the subconscious mind.
And I know you're very big on certain thoughts, especially, and tell us why it's so important what you're thinking about before you go to sleep and also when you first wake up in the morning.
Well, for rewiring your brain, I work with a lot of smokers, and they want to change habits and add habits, and thoughts and feelings is what programs that part of the brain that controls habits in the brain. And the last 5 minutes before you fall asleep, what you think about, what you feel, marinates all night long in your subconscious mind.
Your subconscious is very powerful, isn't it?
It's equivalent to a 60-story high-rise. 98% of your life is a subconscious blueprint. And you can change that via, as you're falling asleep, you're automatically going through the meditative prayer programmable state. Hypnosis is nothing more than bypassing of the critical thinking to reprogram the subconscious mind. And you're using that last 5 minutes, absolutely magnificently brilliant, but the majority of us don't realize we're doing it consciously, on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Accidentally, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But the last 5 minutes before you fall asleep, I recommend you just really keep your thoughts on what you're appreciative of. Because if you have fear, worry, anxieties, if you're thinking about lack or what you're angered about, that what you think, what you feel the last 5 minutes will ferment. It will marinate all night long. And without your blessing, or you knowing it, it's an automatic working subconscious habit within a few weeks. And if it's a subconscious habit, you're living it. You're tasting it. You're spending it. You are that.
Is the default position of all of our brains worry and negativity?
Well, that part of the brain, there is no default. There's either a success or failure. It's you cannot have a thought that doesn't create a current. And each current creates a physiological response. So are you keeping your thoughts on what you're appreciative, what you're grateful for? Appreciation, I like that word better. Or are you keeping your thought on what's wrong? And you have to be kind of a thought warrior in the sense that you've got to guard what you're putting into your mind, into your thoughts, into your belly, the feeling, as you're falling asleep, because it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's either a success or a failure mechanism.
Monday morning, you get up and nobody's happy about it. Everybody sort of is tired from the weekend. Is there a trick for Monday morning that you have?
Oh, man, there's a great trick. The part of your brain that controls how you feel, not only physically, but more importantly, mentally, emotionally, is the part of your brain that is programmed by words. And because of that deep meditative state, nobody ever meditates deeper than we're all of us the first 17 seconds upon awakening, eyes still closed. Maybe you hit your phone and turn off the alarm, but that first 17 seconds, because of that deep meditative state, and it's the part of the brain that controls your body, both nervous systems, by how you feel. What you say, and what I'm trying to say here is your first 17 seconds of what you think, what you say, what you feel is equivalent to 60,000 thoughts.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you get up and the first thing you're dreading is the traffic and what the boss is going to say to you at work, then you're going to have a bad day, aren't you?
Correct. I recommend I am well. I am every day in every way a tiny little bit better and better and better. I am well. I am better and better and better every day in every way.
I'll make a note, Vivian and Joe in the control room. Start the show tomorrow morning saying that just after 5 a.m. We'll see if it works.
Well, I'll tell you, your first 17 seconds dictates your mental, emotional mood for 24 hours. And you're using that time period magnificently brilliant.
That's fascinating. Sean Mozell, hypnotist. Sean, you were saying during the break here that it's really about thinking what you want rather than what's wrong. Talk about that. Explain that a little bit.
Well, the subconscious is a goal-striving mechanism. And if you're keeping your dominant thought on what you want and you're keeping the feeling of what it feels like, that's how you program the subconscious. And it works both ways, though.
When you treat people who are trying to stop smoking, how do you do that and how long does it take?
It's 2 hours. And the system we're using right now is highly regarded as the number one. We're boasting. I'm very proud. We're over a 90-plus success rate, and I back people for life.
Just 1 2-hour session?
Yes. And they leave not wanting a cigarette, no cravings, no withdrawals, and they're done.
Well, you've been doing this almost 50 years, so I know you know what you're doing.
Well, the smokers,
here.
I've been working with smokers for about 20 years.
And with this great success rate?
Well, it's just in the last year. It went from an 80 to 90-plus in the last year.
How much do people have to do on their own, though, after they leave your session?
Well, they're gonna keep their thoughts where they want them, but they're done. While they're in the office, their subconscious mind switches. It switches from hand-to-mouth feel-good to danger. I don't want it.
Well, one of the more popular topics around here is sleep and the lack of it. Do you deal with people who have trouble getting to sleep, insomniacs, and how do you treat them?
Yes, and there's something a little more common is falling asleep and then waking up.
What do you mean?
Well, people will fall asleep or they have, there's only two types of sleep issues. You can't fall asleep or you're waking up after you fall asleep. And they're both the same homework. And I do recommend the 4-7-8 breathing, which is out all everywhere on the internet. That's something to lower breathing once again. And just Google 4-7-8, go back to sleep in 60 seconds. You'll see plenty of info on it. But that alone will produce melatonin in the brain. It'll produce chemicals to help you relax. But a very great, a very beneficial thing you can do is start doing a 5 to 10 minute mental relaxation before you fall asleep. Sit in a chair and just count your breathing or just pay attention. Count backwards from 20 to 1.
When you talk about 4-7-8, if you wake up in the middle of the night, that refers to seconds.
The lower belly, yes. You're going to press your lower belly out for the count of 4. You're going to hold it for the count of 7, and you're going to press your belly in as you're exhaling. And I mean the lower belly, from the belly button down.
Don't be doing that while you're driving right now, by the way.
Well, actually, Bob, that'd be a great thing to do because you're using by blowing out your lower belly, you have more Evoli, more brain signals in that part of your lower lobes of your lungs. And when you do that, you produce Prozac, you produce serotonin. That's a mood-altering chemical. You're also producing a pain-reducing chemicals, a codeine, endorphins. And you're going to have an anti-inflammatory. You're going to also, they'll produce melatonin, all by that lower belly breathing. It's very highly effective.
So if you want to reduce stress, that's the way to do it, isn't it?
Well, it's one great way, lower belly breathing. Complete breathing is also great with the for instant relief of stress or fear or anxiousness. You can do that. Also, if you're anxious, put your hand on your heart and breathe through your heart. Imagine if you're breathing through your heart. That's a very good one too. Your heart has more electrical magnetic energy than anywhere else in your body, and that'll instantly calm you down within 3 to 5 breaths.
One hand on the wheel there as you're stuck in the rush hour, and the other hand on your heart.
Correct.
And
you don't have to hand on the heart, but it just makes it a little easier to imagine breathing through your heart.
Do you help people who have problems with their memory?
Yes, I do. And when you do your mental relaxation is what self-hypnosis was called up to 1912. Relaxation, meditation, self-hypnosis, mindfulness. By doing this, your memory is improved dramatically. Anytime you can slow down your brain and relax your body, it's spectacular for the memory.
Talk about meditation, because I think people have this idea that they have to be in a special place at a special time with special surroundings to meditate, but that's not really true, is it?
No, it's not. Meditation is a focused daydream state, and you can do that anywhere you do that. How about people driving, getting to where they're going, say, holy cow, how'd I get here? 20 minutes went by. Wow. They're in a meditative state.
Well, I don't know if that's a good thing, right? Because you're not paying attention
to
the traffic.
Well, subconsciously, it's not bad, but that's what they call daydreaming. Meditation is a focused, relaxed state. And that's what we teach people how to do.
And how long does it take to get in a good meditative state?
Well, I say a good 5 to 10 seconds.
That's all?
Yeah. Well, if you're at a red light, roll your eyes up. Look up as if you're looking through the top of your skull. Take a deep breath. Relax your eyes. Keep your eyes open, of course, if you're in the car. But take a deep breath. And just by raising your eyeballs up 45 degrees, you stimulate the occipital nerve, which produces a gas in your brain, and both brain hemispheres slow down. That's why children, when they reach for information, they look up at the ceiling. By raising your eyeballs up, you stimulate that occipital nerve. It slows down the brain. And if you want to have recall, what is memory? Recall. Do that technique, and you'll have better recall instantly.
It's fascinating, and it really all makes sense. But at first, when we hear you're a hypnotist, we conjure up all these images of fakery and performers, don't we?
Yeah, that was from all the movies. But hypnotists teach people how to put themselves in a mentally, physically, emotionally relaxed state, and they do that because that's one of the benefits of that is you get to hypnosis is to bypass inner critical thinking. So when you're in a daydream state, but we want you in a focused daydream state, and when you're doing that, your logical reasoning mind goes off to the side, and that's a very quick and easier way to program, a much faster way to program, reprogram the subconscious mind to either add habits or change habits.
Do people have an open mind to all of this? Because to some people, what you're saying sounds ridiculous.
Well, it's pretty common sense. This has been over 75 years of science behind all of this, and
you've worked for various educational institutions facilities, right?
Medical hypnosis at Northwestern Norris Center for about 8 years. I've taught thousands of people. I love working with lawyers, law firms. I've worked with police departments, fire departments, city halls, schools. I've been very fortunate. I've been able to help thousands of people the last 40 years.
Are most people a little late coming to this knowledge about hypnosis?
hypnosis is the persona has changed, but this science and I mean, what's the science of prayer? Prayer is you put yourself in a relaxed state and you see and feel the prayer as if it's already answered and you give thanks for it. You see, programming of the subconscious mind is nothing more than consistent thoughts and feelings of that goal accomplished.
Prayer is really meditation, isn't it?
Prayer is a focused, relaxed state. In fact, prayer, meditation, self-hypnosis, mindfulness is nothing more than that. That's exactly what it is.
I feel better just talking to you, by the way.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Can you come in tomorrow at 5 a.m.? Sean Mozell is the owner of the Wilmette Stop Smoking Center and the Wilmette Hypnosis Center. Sean, it's fascinating, and some of these tips seem very simple, and like you say, you can do them right there when you're stuck in the rush hour, and it can calm you down, can't it?
Yes, it works. It works. Works phenomenally.
Well, come back and see us again, will you?
Because
I think we need your help.
Tip of the month.
Yeah. All right. It's fine with me. And you don't even need to have your stopwatch going back and forth
in front of me.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks
Thank
for the opportunity.
You. Sean Mozell. Bob Surratt Morning Show and Hypnotism Center. And we have a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play the St. Louis Blues coming up on Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. And if you can use these tickets, I got a couple free. If you're the first caller to answer this question, what was at least one method that hypnotist Sean Mozell had for helping rush hour drivers, for helping you if you're stuck in traffic and stressed? What's one thing you can do? He mentioned a few. We'll take any one of those. If you're the first caller in, you get the tickets. 312-981-7200. Is everybody here in a trance right now? Everybody okay? Everybody? He forgot to snap his fingers and bring us back. did he make Gozanich into a chicken before he left?
I think he did, yeah.
He stopped in the newsroom. Mary, are you down with all those tips for rush hour drivers?
She's a namaste right
she's
now.
She's asleep. Yeah.
Oh, what?
Man. Yeah.
Nothing. Me?
No, nothing. Nothing.
I'm relaxing.
Oh, she's meditating right now. Let's see. We've got Dr. Eileen Marty standing by. She is amazing. She is someone who advises the White House, the National Security Administration, and other government agencies on infectious diseases. So we'll talk about what's happening with the coronavirus and how you can protect yourself with Dr. Marty. That's coming up at about 7:48. Right now, let's talk to Jim in Bedford Park. Jim, what was one of the tricks that our hypnotist had for you if you're stuck in the rush hour?
Lower belly breathing.
Ding, ding, ding!
You got it. Lower belly breathing, right against your seatbelt. Congratulations there, Jim. We're going to get you the Blackhawks tickets.
Awesome. Thank you.
You'll be going Sunday, March 8th. It sounds like you're still under Sean Mozell's spell there, Jim.
I'm doing them right now.
Are you driving at the moment?
No, I'm at my desk.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, he had some other good tips that you can try out there. Hang on a second. We'll get all the information we need to get you the Blackhawks tickets, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks.
Way to go. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And for all the right reasons, Four Seasons, find them online at foursseasonsheatingandcooling.com. You can get tickets this afternoon. Also, if you listen to Ro Khan, he'll be giving away another pair of Blackhawks tickets. Every Monday, more chances to win tickets to Blackhawks games from Four Seasons in the morning and then on the way home as well. Checking sports, Andy Mazur's in for Dave Ennett, and Andy's back from spring training. And I see here that Eloy Jimenez is declaring that Luis Robert is going to be the next Mike Trout.
You know, it's way too early to tell that, but you know, you look at some of the actions of this young guy, especially in spring training, you know, it may not be that far off. I mean,
he looked impressive too.
He looks impressive, but again, he hasn't played a major league game yet, and everything changes when you leave Arizona. You know, you could be a March player, but it counts more when you're in April, May, June, July, August, and September, of course. But I like what he brings because he's got the tools. He certainly has speed. I saw him run from first to third on a triple that he legged out in the right center field gap. and his athleticism is going to make up for a lot of deficiencies if he has any defensively.
What about his attitude, his makeup, his personality, and handling the pressure? What do you think?
He is a fun-loving guy.
Oh, all right. Yeah. I'd like to hear that.
You know, it's funny, too, because Ricky Renteria was asked about this right around when I got there about a week ago. He's still learning English and is trying to communicate better with his teammates, but this is his second year in the organization, basically playing full-time because he was injured most of the time a couple of years ago. He's trying much more to be a better teammate, a more friendly, personable kind of kid, and he is lockered in between. I mentioned this earlier. He's lockered in between Jose Abreu, who is the unofficial, quote-unquote, leader of this team, and Yoan Moncada, who's kind of quiet. So it's interesting. He's got a really unique dichotomy there. He's got a real fun-loving guy in Abreu and a pretty serious guy in Moncada, so he gets to see both ways. And he's always got a smile on his face, but I would too if I had that much money in my pocket.
And Moncada really idolizes Abreu.
He does.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, he really does. I mean, and you know, Abreu is one of those guys. I interviewed him through the translator there, Billy Russo, and it was so important for him to come back to the White Sox in his mind because of what he saw the organization doing and what he saw from some of the younger players that are on the way, not just Luis Robert, but guys like Andrew Vaughn and Nick Madrigal. Those two guys in particular, he looks around and says, I got to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And he said he would have signed himself if he had the opportunity.
Yeah, and you know what I like from the Cubs camp, and granted it's only spring training, but Almora is, they can't get him out.
No, he's hitting home runs, too.
He said he's changed some things, and whatever he's doing, I hope it carries into the season.
Yeah, he's got a couple of home runs in the spring. Javi Baez hit his second. I think more importantly yesterday was the fact that John Lester went out and had a really good start for the Cubs. He went three innings and struck out four. Gave up a couple of hits and no runs. So that's going to be interesting to watch as the season progresses, how much they get out of John Lester as he gets a little bit older.
I don't know what Albert Almora did. I don't know what his adjustment was, but he's now 7-for-14 with two homers this spring. I need to talk to him because I need to help on the softball field when we start. I've been in the slump for about 7 years now. You probably heard the news this morning on the coronavirus outbreak, the U.S. confirming cases in Rhode Island and also here in the Chicago area. Dr. Eileen Marty is a professor of infectious diseases in the Department of Medicine at FIU, and she joins us now to talk about what's happening. Dr. Marty, good to have you with us as always. Is this a pandemic, and what exactly is that?
Well, that's a great question, Bob. So here's the problem. It absolutely fits the original textbook definition, but because Hollywood has made the word sound so scary, we can't use it, okay? So if the original meaning of pandemic means an outbreak that's happening, that's become an epidemic in a zone, and then become, and then those epidemics are happening in multiple different countries, in multiple different continents, and anyone with eyes and ears knows that that's happening. So that would be the old way of thinking, the original definition of the word pandemic. But people misassociate that word with something terribly, terribly dangerous. And just because it fits that definition doesn't define exactly how dangerous or how not dangerous something is. It has nothing to do with the danger, just geographic spread.
Talking about danger, can the coronavirus be fatal in very healthy people?
In the cases in China, we did see some younger individuals that were otherwise healthy succumb to the disease, but by far and away, that's unusual. By far and away, it's people with underlying risk factors and people who are older, and it's absolutely correlated with age, where the highest risks are for those people that are the eldest. So people over 80, of course, are at much higher risk than the over 60 and so forth.
You were breaking up there a little, Dr. Marty. You were saying the people with the highest risk are the older people with a pre-existing condition. Is that right? No, did
correct.
We?
Correct. Well,
oh, there we go.
And just age alone is a risk factor, Bob. age alone is a risk factor. So, so we look at people over 50, over 60, over 70, over 80, and as we look at that progression, the older you are, the higher the risk.
Now,
just by age alone.
And when we talk about the risk, I thought that the coronavirus was spread through contact, but then I heard somebody talking about how it actually can spread through the air too. Is that right?
Well, so this is a virus that is a respiratory virus, and that means that it can be spread by inhalation of little particles that are released by people who are infected in their immediate zone. So usually we mean 1 meter or 3 feet of distance, but we've been defining a contact as anyone who's within 6 feet. 6 feet of someone who has the virus and is shedding virus, and that for at least 15 minutes, that's a contact. So that's a zone where you can consider yourself at risk. And that's why we're asking people to keep their distance from other people. You may have heard that in Mexico they're asking people not to embrace and not to shake hands.
Right.
I'm a big fan of the fist bump, and that's a great way of reducing all kinds of infectious diseases.
Well, what about Lysol wipes? A lot of people are asking about that, and I think on the label it mentions the coronavirus. So what about the wipes? Do they really work?
They certainly help. Absolutely. If you wipe down your surfaces of an area where a lot of people are likely to have touched and you don't know who touched it before you did, that certainly is going to reduce your exposure because it is an envelope virus, and envelope viruses are sensitive to a variety of products. Doesn't have to be Lysol brand, but anything with a high level of ethanol in it or something with Clorox in it, those kinds of products will kill this virus. So cleaning surfaces is a good idea, and overall hygiene is a good idea. So certainly get your office spaces clean, keep them clean, get your homes as clean as possible, and when you're out and about, especially if you happen to be someone who has any kind of underlying condition, then definitely you should do your best that if you're out and about to maintain the spaces and the things that you touch clean. One of the things that happened, the idea of the
Oops, hang on a second. Hold on, Dr. Marty, you're going through like a bad zone there. We'll get you back in a second here. One of the things I noticed over the weekend, people are freaking out. People are taking precautions, and it made me think that, and here's a prediction for you, that we'll have no flu or no colds this season because everybody is being so careful with all of these washing your hands and not touching each other. Maybe there'll be a benefit out of this. What do you think?
I 100% agree with you. That's absolutely correct. Not just the colds and flus, but you'll reduce diarrheal diseases. All kinds of contagious diseases will be reduced by our efforts to reduce coronavirus spread. Absolutely.
All right. Let me see if I've got the tip straight. Talking about tips, wash the tips of your fingers when you're washing your hands. Take at least 20 minutes to wash your hands. Don't look away when you sneeze or cough. Do that into your arm, right?
Absolutely. That's good respiratory hygiene. And then what you described with the hands, yes, you absolutely have to scrub those fingernails against the palm of your hand to make sure that you're getting virus out from underneath your fingernails. And make sure you get between your fingers as well when you wash. So every finger deserves its individual attention. The other thing is that people are considering wearing dinner gloves. Nice dinner gloves when they're out and about, and they can toss those afterwards just to reduce their personal contact. And that would be somebody who, again, has an underlying disease.
And are we still talking about a 1% fatality rate here?
No, we're talking about a 2-3% fatality rate, and it really depends on the individual country and the capability of the individual country to handle the severe and critical patients. That affects those numbers. So we've seen a little over 3,000 people that have died from this infection as already, and we're at nearly 90,000 people infected, but we're like 89,170 or something to that effect. So you can just do the math and figure out what the fatality rate is on that, but the reality is, if you look at country per country, you'll see very different rates, right? So if you look at Iran, they have a very high rate of case fatality rate, and it really has to do with how each country is or is not able to manage their cases. And that's why we're so afraid of what might happen in very underprivileged countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa.
Finally, what can we do to boost our immune system right now? Are you a proponent of taking zinc?
Well, a little bit of supplement doesn't hurt. You know, a little bit of good old vitamin C and zinc is okay. It's unlikely to hurt you in any way, and it could help your immune system. But more importantly is what we've said all along, getting a good night's rest, eating well, avoid those foods that are, you know, high in carbs, in bad carbs, you know, like purified sugars and things like that. And also exercise every day. Those are absolutely fundamental things that people ought to be doing. And again, and like you said, Bob, it's going to help with all kinds of disease. Oh, one more thing. People shouldn't smoke, because truly smoking damages the ciliary cells of the respiratory system that you need to get rid of this and every other respiratory pathogen. So if you're smoking, I would suggest that at least try quitting.
Another reason not to smoke, Dr. Eileen Marty. I hope you don't mind when I hang up on you now, Doctor. I'm going to press the button with my knuckle on the phone just to be safe. You know what I mean?
Good for you.
have a good day. Always great to talk to you. Thanks.
All right, take care.
Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
8:10, time to check in with Dean Richards on the entertainment beat over there at Channel 9. Dean, I took your advice, went with Mrs. Surratt to see The Invisible Man.
And?
It was really good. It was really... The only problem was it was a little too thrilling. My right arm is bruised from Marianne just holding on to me during the movie. A very good script in addition to being a thriller.
Yeah, a good script, good performances, white knuckles.
Yeah, know, and it did well time. Over the weekend, right?
Yeah,
the box office.
Number one movie, $29 million over the weekend. It unseated Sonic the Hedgehog, which had been number one for 2 weeks. So, great weekend. And, you know, what's really great now, when you go to see this movie, you sit in your seat, and then when somebody comes to try to sit next to you, tell them that your invisible friend is sitting next to you, that you can't take the seat next to me. Get a little spreading out room.
Right, and you know, with the coronavirus, you want to have that space. Exactly.
Well, you know, I wonder if that's going to begin, the fear of the coronavirus, if that's going to begin affecting things like concerts and going to movies and, public events like that, plays. Experts are saying that it's very possible that we could be getting to that point. The Louvre in Paris has shut down for fear of the coronavirus there. The employees said that they wanted to err on the side of caution, and they shut the museum down.
I was thinking about that Saturday night, because I thought where we went to see the movie, The Invisible Man, I thought, well, great reviews, opening weekend, Saturday night, and it wasn't as crowded as I thought, and I'm wondering if some of that wasn't coronavirus effect already.
Yeah, I think people are beginning to take this more seriously. I was in Los Angeles for most of the weekend, and about half of my plane had the masks on. That was the first time that I'd seen that much. All over the airport, people were wearing masks. Yet, ironically, while we're on the flight, you know, how the people kick their shoes off. Sometimes their shoes and socks, but yeah. I didn't see that. But people kicking their shoes off and walking around the plane. And, you know, sorry if you're eating breakfast. They go into the restroom in stocking feet in an airplane.
Oh, it's man.
Like, what are you? Don't you see all these people with masks?
We don't need that. What happened to Oprah over the weekend?
She also was in Los Angeles. That's why there's so many rumors about both of us that we wind up in the same city often at the same time. She happened to be there. She's in major cities around the country. She's doing something called the Vision 2020 Tour, where she comes in and does these inspirational speeches. She invites usually A-list stars to join her, and they sit down and she interviews them about what motivated them and, you know, their inner spirit. In Los Angeles, it happened to be with Jennifer Lopez, but ironically, when she had started the show and Oprah was talking about emotional balance in her life, she lost her balance on stage. And she took a hard fall right on the stage.
Hmm.
She's okay. Everything's okay. She, you know, said on the mic instantly, "I knew I shouldn't have worn these shoes." So she slipped on some gym shoes, finished the show, interviewed Jennifer Lopez, and said, "I'm going home to ice my knee." So I can relate to that, having had a fall myself in the last couple of months.
Ouch. Dean Richards with us from Channel 9. Tom Skilling is going to be out for a couple of months, isn't he?
Yeah, he posted on his social media over the weekend that this week he is going to be having gastric bypass surgery. He, in a really thoughtfully written post, talks about how, you know, so many people are battling weight most unsuccessfully, no matter how much they diet, no matter how much they exercise. Some people just need this extra help. And he, I think, very, very bravely and candidly says that he is one of those people. And he's going to be off the air for about a month, 3 to 4 weeks is what they're telling him. The surgery is scheduled for later on this week. I saw him. Steve Sanders had a big going away party. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, and Tom was there, and not near the buffet table, interestingly. It was
good.
He and I both were avoiding the buffet table, but we had a really long talk about it, and he's given this so much thought and struggled with this for a very long time, and he's decided that this is what is right for him. And I applaud him so much for making this decision as steps toward good health. I applaud him for being courageous enough to talk about this openly and in the public to inspire other people who are also struggling with weight that maybe this might be an option that they might also want to explore. But, you know, in the meantime, think a good thought, say a prayer for T. Skilling, truly one of the greatest guys in the world. And mm-hmm. And he's going to be on after, I think the surgery is like the middle of the week. He's going to be on the mend for a little while after that. So, you know, we wish him all the best and send him all of our love. He's the greatest.
Yep, he really is. And, you know, you get older, you got to really do something. And it's a good thing he's doing it. We had Al Roker on the broadcast here Friday. And Al, of course, had that done quite a while ago. And he's been doing very well ever since. Yeah, Let's hope Tom has a similar outcome.
So many good stories, especially recently. I guess the surgery... There were different kinds of surgery where they would put a band around your stomach and they would do different things. But I guess the latest incarnation of this gastric bypass surgery is extremely effective. I've been hearing from people. I posted this on my social media, the story about Tom, and people have been saying that they did the procedure a year ago and it's the only regret they have is that they waited so long to do it. People are, you know, very, very pleased with it. So we hope for the same kind of results for Tom.
Yes, we do. Dr. Oz is in a little feud with Mark Wahlberg. What happened here?
So about a month ago, Dr. Oz said in an interview that he did not think that breakfast was the most important meal of the day, and even said that he doesn't think that it's a bad idea to completely skip breakfast, talking about people going on intermittent fasting. I mean, that's the latest diet trend right now. But it's the first time that a lot of people, myself included, had heard a medical professional, especially one who is so respected as Dr. Oz, say, don't start your day with breakfast. You've always heard everybody say that. If you're going to skip any meals, don't make it breakfast. So Mark Wahlberg heard this. Mark is a fitness fanatic. He works out all the time. He is extremely dedicated to good nutrition and eating properly. He heard this and he said, no way, that's true. And he took Dr. Oz to task. And as I said on TV this morning, Bob, who are you going to believe? Somebody with several medical degrees or somebody who was a Calvin Klein underwear model and part of the Funky Bunch?
No contest.
No contest with that. But Mark does know what he's talking about with nutrition. So, you know, the two were kind of poking at each other publicly about this, and they decided to resolve this the way real men do, with a push-up contest, which they did last Thursday at a gym in the Los Angeles area. Over the weekend, when I was in Los Angeles, I sat down and talked with Mark Wahlberg about his new movie that's coming out on Netflix this week. But we also talked about this Dr. Oz feud. And I think that you just did it, right? Didn't you just
We worked out on Thursday.
And I don't want to say you kicked his butt with it, but you did win, as I understand.
Yeah, but you know, he was the good sport. I don't think he really knew what he was getting into. The thing is, at an F45 gym especially, you can go really easy. You could have never worked out in a gym, and you can modify all the exercises, or you can go as hard as a world-class athlete. And I usually put up the volume pretty high. So he wanted to work out with me. So I put him to task, but he's really been helpful with kind of how I can digest better and do all those things. And you know, his mission is to help people live healthier, happy lives. And so I really love what he does. You know, when they came up to me, it was like, Dr. Oz says don't eat breakfast. I said, I don't care what Dr. Oz says.
That's the only person who has ever said those words. I don't care what Dr. Oz says.
Well, I don't know how a push-up contest solves this. I'd like to get the numbers though. How many they did? That would be interesting.
Well, Mark Wahlberg was just going to town with this. Dr. Oz is 13 years older than Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. He competed fairly well with this. I mean, Mark, they were going at a pretty even pace. Dr. Oz eventually ran out of gas. And all I could do is think of, like, how would I perform with this? I would be out within, like, 10 push-ups. I'd be done and crying.
You know, we talked to a doctor here last week about these studies. Should you eat breakfast, not eat breakfast, big breakfast, small breakfast? Because it's very confusing. And I think the confusing part here is the experts are now saying it's good to have many, many hours between dinner and breakfast. So I don't know whether people are really advising you to skip breakfast altogether. I don't know that they're saying it's not important. I think they're saying it's important to fast for periods of time. And, you know, right now I'm starving because I forgot to bring my banana or apple in with me. And I've been up like for, 5 or 6 hours right, or whatever. So I need to eat something.
Right. Well, I think when John Williams comes in, that you and he should have a push-up contest.
I'll take him on.
Yeah.
I'll take him on. I'm ready.
Okay. That sounded like a gauntlet to me.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing my push-ups and sit-ups lately. Let's talk about... I heard this story about Judge Judy, who, do I have this right, that she like makes like $1 billion a week on this show? Why would she be leaving it?
She is the highest paid personality on television, believe it or not.
Incredible.
Highest paid. She makes $47 million a year. Oh, basically sitting on that bench and yelling at people. That's pretty much all she does. I don't want to hear that.
Good job.
That's not an answer. All she does is, I don't even know why anybody would go on that show. You know you're going to get yelled at by Judge Judy when you go on there. But she has the top rated syndicated program in America. 9 million people a day watch Judge Judy. So it makes perfect sense that she's calling it quits on the Judge Judy show. Here's the deal. She's going to make that announcement officially on Ellen DeGeneres today.
My husband is depressed totally now.
And, don't be too depressed. Don't be too depressed because she's going to the Judge Judy show will end, and a new show called Judy Justice will begin soon.
Oh, no.
Here's why. The Judge Judy show is owned by CBS. They own it all. They own the reruns. They own everything. Judy Justice would be owned by Judge Judy.
Because she needs some more money.
Because she's hurting. You can barely get by on, what did I say? It was, 47 million a year.
Throw her a bone.
You can barely get by on that kind of money. So now with this new show, which I presume is going to be very similar to the old one, nobody really knows. They haven't said when it's going to be on or on what networks or stations or however that's going to work. But so she will have a new show. It's just going to have a new name.
And finally, it's Flava Flav or whatever he's called in the news. What happened to him?
Now, first of all, let me just say, you're a pretty hip guy. So I'm guessing that you probably know, you know who Flava Flav is, right?
I've seen him.
The rapper. All you got to do is see him, and you will never forget him. He's a rapper. He's been part of the group called Public Enemy for 35 years. I mean, he is one of the first people of rap music. Most notably, he wears a giant clock around his neck on a big giant chain. That's his trademark, that he wears this big chain. So over the weekend, he sends a cease and desist order to presidential candidate Bernie Sanders because his Public Enemy partner, Chuck D, agreed to do a benefit for Bernie Sanders. And they've been promoting it, saying, see Public Enemy. Apparently, they've been using an image of Flava Flav as part of the invitations to come to this event. And Flava Flav sent a cease and desist order saying, stop using my image, unauthorized, stop using my name, and stop using my trademark clock. Apparently, that was also part of the thing. So what happens is that Chuck D, his partner of 35 years, fires him from the group Public Enemy. Apparently, Chuck D owns the name Public Enemy. He fires his longtime co-star. Flava Flav is now out of Public Enemy, and the concert went on as scheduled for Bernie Sanders last night. So if anybody's got a job for a guy wearing a giant clock around his neck, Flava Flav is available.
That's perfect for next weekend when we move the clocks.
He would be the perfect spokesperson for that.
I just want to hear, and Dean, maybe you can get some tape. I'd love to hear Bernie Sanders just say Flava Flav. I just would like that. See if you can work on that.
Boy! I just want to hear them both talk together. Bernie Sanders and then Flava Flav. Boy! That's just like his trademark.
And then Bernie would give the percentage of records that Flava Flav has sold over the years.
Yeah, I said this on my radio show yesterday after I saw the video of Tom Steyer, who has dropped out of the presidential race, but he was doing a campaign stop, and he appeared with some hip-hop group. I don't remember the name of the group, but he appeared with them. They were performing, and Tom Steyer starts dancing to hip-hop music. Bernie Sanders, I'm not a political expert. If you are with Public Enemy or anybody, don't dance on stage if you're
right
a presidential
and,
candidate.
And don't post for pictures on a tank.
Never looks good.
Dean Richards will leave you with that image. Talk to you tomorrow morning. Bye. Thanks, Dean. Flavor Flav! Neil Sammers is an award-winning author and publisher of 26 books about Chicago and its neighborhoods over the decades. He joins us now to talk about the great entertainment venues and entertainers who have been in our city. Neil, good morning. What makes Chicago such What makes Chicago such a unique center for entertainment now and in decades past?
Well, I mean, throughout the 20th century, the great thing about Chicago was that any form of entertainment you'd want, you'd find in Chicago, from jazz clubs to blues clubs to comedy clubs to live theater to the Balvin and Katz movie houses downtown, to the hotels. It was all over the place that you could find entertainment, and the ballrooms, too.
I know you've done a lot of research to remember the places and performers throughout the 20th century here in Chicago. What stands out most? Was it our great movie theaters that at one time housed live shows? What was it about the city that made us really unique and stand out?
Well, of course, downtown was then State Street, where all the Balvin and Katz theaters were up and down the street. And as you said, they not only showed the first run movies, but also had live entertainment and all kinds of entertainment. I once saw Roy Rogers and Trigger on the stage of the Chicago Theater. So
wow,
that just comes to mind. But I also would say to you that one of the great things about Chicago in the 20th century were the jazz clubs across the South Side and North Side. People love to go hear jazz and all the great jazz performers, too.
The book you have, Entertaining Chicago, is filled with reminiscences of places. And also, you include hotels, don't you?
Yes, we do, because, for example, I mean, I'll pick one. The all the hotels across downtown would have dancing, and they would also broadcast radio shows from there. And the Edgewater Beach Hotel on the north side had a broadcast for radio. So it was anything you wanted, you could go out in the hotels, and you could see all the top stars in the hotels and the restaurants in the hotels.
I know people have strong memories about rock and roll clubs around here. Everybody remembers the first concert they went to and some of those old venues. In fact, after a break, we'll see if we can get in some of your memories if you want to call us or text us here at 312-981-7200. But you mentioned, I know, the Quiet Night, the Kinetic Playground. There were so many of these clubs back in the day, weren't there?
There were, and I got a lot of these suggestions and ideas from the great rock and roll singer Ronnie Rice. Started listing these places and telling me I have to include them in the book. So they were just, and all the top rock and roll stars performed in Chicago. That's a good, and of course, one of the most famous ones with performances was at Comiskey Park in 1965 with the Beatles.
Right. You know, last time I drove by Golf Mill there in Niles, where the old Mill Run Theater and Playhouse used to be, I was thinking of all the great entertainers who played out there. I know you looked into this, and it's a shame that there aren't more venues that size. They kind of disappeared, didn't they?
Well, that's the trouble. That they got smaller and smaller, so all the big venues started, you know, it was hard to get enough customers to keep going. So, and it is sad because the city changed so much as these places closed.
Neil Sammer's book is Entertaining Chicago, Remembering the Places, Performers, and Stories Throughout the 20th Century. And if you have a memory that fits in here, 312-981-7200. We're talking to Neil Sammer's, who interviewed dozens of folks around here regarding Chicago's old entertainment venues. What types of people did you talk to about this, Neil?
Everyone and any age. And I have to mention, the book was co-authored with my friend Bob Dauber, so I should say that. And also, people should know that they can get the book at Amazon and BN.com and bookstores. So I'll throw that in.
But again, it's
just a wide range of people. There's also a whole section in the book about sports and about the sports teams over the years, too. So there's a lot in there.
Well, was Mr. Kelly's one of the most famous spots here?
Well, that's where the whole book idea started, when David Marienthal, whose father and uncle own Mr. Kelly's London House and Happy Medium, got in touch with me. He's working on a documentary about them, and Mr. Kelly's is heavily mentioned in the book, and there's a long interview with Tom Dreesen, among many, and talking about Barbara Streisand and all the top stars performed at Mr. Kelly's.
We've had kind of a resurgence in comedy clubs in recent years. Back in the day, were there more around here?
Well, of course, you had Second City getting its start here too, and that's a major thing. And people like Shelley Berman got his start through what became Second City from the Compass Players. So it was a different era. But even Second City today is an important comedy place.
And you had places like the Playboy Club, which aren't around anymore, and all sorts of big-time entertainment showed up there, right?
Absolutely. And, again, I had the honor of interviewing Hugh Hefner a few times, and it was a great story, and he told the story many times about how Playboy got going in Chicago and how he was a Chicagoan. He loved Chicago, and he told me the most romantic part of his life was the 1940s.
Not surprised. A couple of interesting texts here from 847. When I was in junior high school, I saw Donny Osmond at the Airy Crown Theater. That was my first concert. Many shows at the old Airy Crown in McCormick Place. And then they had a fire and it came back, but it's kind of part of history now. Did you hear about the Airy Crown a lot, Neil, in your research?
We didn't. Again, you know, I've told people that it would become an encyclopedia if you start including every place for entertainment throughout the 20th century, but Airy Crown was an important place.
And this from 815, mentioning the Kinetic Playground, Jethro Tull, Led Zeppelin, Vanilla Fudge. There were some huge names at that place, weren't there?
Exactly. And as I said, every top performer, rock and roll, entertainer, every top entertainer performed in Chicago throughout the 20th century, all the big ones, and in different, like even like the a place with like the Chez Paris. If people remember that club.
And then you had smaller places. Well, actually, it was a big ballroom, the Holiday, Milwaukee Avenue. Jeff texted us. He saw the Buckinghams there. And once you open up this this area, people come out of the woodwork with their memories, don't they?
Absolutely. As I said, and every time we made a presentation, someone said, by the way, you left out this place. And I said, I know. We're always going to have places left out, but it's good to think about all the places you went for entertainment.
Yeah, let's
go today.
Let's see if we can squeeze in a couple of calls and check out Carol here from Riverside. What's your entertainment memory, Carol?
Well, all of the folk music clubs that produced John Prine, Steve Goodman, Gibson and Camp, Bonnie Kolak, all along Wells in Old Town. And I'm wondering, well, also North Avenue, I'm wondering if those are in the book.
Neil?
Heavily covered, and I interviewed Bonnie Kolak, and that interview is in the book, and you know, the Gate of Horn and all these folk clubs are in there. So it's across the board, and of course there's a story about the Gate of Horn closing down when Lenny Bruce was inappropriate, and they closed it.
Yep, Chicago entertainment history. Thank you, Carol. This is Brian in Lombard. Hi, Brian. What do you remember there, Brian?
My very first concert was, like, I think it was 74 at the International Amphitheater.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw Billy Preston, ZZ Top, and Deep Purple.
Yeah, a lot of shows at the old amphitheater. I saw Carole King and James Taylor there way back in the 70s. Neil, that was a big spot for a while for concerts, wasn't it?
Yes, and it is mentioned in the book, and there's some description in the book about the International Amphitheater, too.
Right, yeah. And you get into the sports venues a lot. What do you find when you're talking to people about their memories there?
Well, again, the key thing for me was that I had a chance to interview some of the great sports stars of Chicago, from Gale Sayers to Billy Pierce to Jim Brosnan. A lot of people their stories and their interviews are in the book, and talk about when the championship teams throughout the 20th century.
Here is Louis from Arlington Heights. What do you recall, Louis, back in the day?
Hey, Bob.
Hi.
Yeah, it had to be either a 66, 67, the Cellar in Arlington Heights, small venue. And I saw the Yardbirds there, and I saw Cream.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I still have my photo ID card.
Hey, they may be coming back. Hold on to it there, Louie. Yeah, the thing about those small clubs, Neil, they had some big entertainment, and there were all sorts of these, well, they were called teen clubs back in the day, weren't they?
Right, and the Cellar is covered in the book.
Yep, it's a good memory. All right, thanks for your call there, Louie. The book is Entertaining Chicago, Remembering the Places, Performers, and Stories Throughout the 20th Century. Neil Sammers, exploring Chicago's history again with this book. And Neil, how do you turn them out so quickly? Since the time you've been talking to us here, I know you've probably published another book. So keep us posted on your further exploits, will you?
Thank you, Bob, very much.
Good talking to you. Yeah, people
same
still,
here.
Still texting us about all of their memories, Uptown Theater, and somebody remembering a show back at the Metro in 1985, and on it goes. 850
and on and on.
Yeah, 855 right now. And I wanted to catch up on some of your feedback. Hang on, let me grab this over here. We got into a conversation last week about streaming, and people are still texting us about that from 317. Hey, Bob, cut the cord years ago. We use Infinity, and one of the Infinity people told us a hack. If you download the Infinity app, you can still watch the local channels, including the local news, WGN, and all the local stations and live sports. Love that hack, and downloading that app has been a lifesaver. Yeah, all right. That makes sense. I think that works. I think that's true. And then we were talking about Rob Blagojevich and his new side gig there where he records various greetings and announcements. And somebody texted us this. Regarding Blago's audio greeting project, someone should pay the fee and have him read an apology for his crimes and admit he was wrong. Your friend Al. Okay, a good idea, Al. And from the 412 area code, I'm not sure where that is. Bob, how many times have you been fired? Well, not as many as Dick Biondi, I can tell you that. And also, I'm very happy to report this. I've never actually been officially fired, you know, where they bring the security guard down and they tell you, you've just done your last show, get your stuff together, we'll walk you out the door. You know what I mean? I guess there's always a first time, though. I mean, but so far, that hasn't happened. So technically, I would say with an asterisk, zero. I mean, usually it's we're not renewing your contract, something to that effect. I've always been allowed to stay after I've been released. Never really exited immediately. I remember one time at Channel 5 after I was doing First Thing in the Morning back in 1990 or 91 or 2, right around there. And the new general manager didn't like me. So, but after I was let go, I stayed there. And when you know, whenever you hear, well, he's been released, but he'll be doing special projects for us. Special projects means you'll never hear from the person again. But anyway, I was there and sitting in my office for a while after the announcement that I was let go from that show, that morning show with Allison. And people would bring tours in and, you know, point out, well, there's Bob Surratt in his office. You know, he was recently fired. They're playing me off, John, but I have saved 10 seconds for a preview of coming attractions.
Andy Mazur and I are having a big argument. I think that the preseason stats, the spring training stats for a baseball team are prelude to how well they'll do in the regular season. I said, I'll bet there's a correlation. Look it up. Andy's not going to look it up.
We'll hear all about it.
Mega quiz will be about Chicago comics. We'll follow the markets. We'll follow the news. Here we go.
Have a great day. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.